is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The king's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viziosi jumped it perfectly.
Well, welcome to this week's edition of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. This week, as usual, our guests Paddy Power and Ruby Walsh, but a very special guest in William Haggis. All your brilliant questions as part of Paddy's mailbag and from Twitter, and it's all straight from the horse's mouth. Yes, welcome along to the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. My name is Patrick Connelly and I'm filling in for Tom Nugent this week. In a moment, we will look back on the racing action from the weekend, but we wanted to start this week's show with a special edition of Racing Gold. Well, it has been a difficult and emotional week for Irish racing with the loss of a man having made his mark in the sport as a jockey. He went on to make an even bigger impression through his bravery in the face of a quite terrible illness. Much has been said over the past few days, but it all bears repeating: a great jockey, a remarkable man, and let's listen back to one of his most notable triumphs in the saddle.
Mookbill from JG's Choice, Hurricane Allen, every chance, sat in the fence. Here comes Two Searle, here too comes Refuse to Bend in the sheepskin noseband out wide. A very open looking race, Hold That Tiger's got plenty to do. Hurricane Allen strikes on from Two Searle, then Satin against the fence. Mookbill snatched up JG's Choice, short of room. Two Searle, Hurricane Allen, Refuse to Bend stays on very strongly. Then North Dancer from the rear, Refuse to Bend from Two Searle. Zafin with a rally as well, Refuse to Bend from North Dancer. Zafin and then North Dancer chasing them up Toot Searle. He's gone to Ireland, he's gone to Dermot World, only his second British Classic win. Unbeaten son of Sadler's Wells. Yes, you guessed it, Sadler's Wells has sired yet another Classic winner in the colours of the Moyglare Stud Farm. Hat Smullen in the saddle, but Refused to Bend, a horse regarded as more likely to contest the Derby than the 2,000 guineas at the start of the season.
Yeah, refusing to bend, an aptly named horse, given Pat Smullen was on board. Dermot Weld speaking during the week, saying that Pat did refuse to bend himself once diagnosed with that horrific illness. Ruby Walsh and Paddy Power, of course, with me. And Ruby, I want to start with you because over the weekend, there was a piece published and written by yourself in the Irish Examiner detailing your friendship with Pat Smullen. It is a brilliant piece, and I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you now. It's a fantastic piece. It really shows the depth of your friendship and how it affected you. So how are you? Are you okay after what's been a pretty horrible few days?
Yeah, but I guess they were a pretty ordinary few days, Patrick, but not surprising, I suppose. You kind of knew it was always going to happen, but that still didn't mean that it wasn't shocking. But look, Pat was, will forever be known for what he did for cancer research trials and what he achieved as a jockey. But he was much, much more than that. And I think as a friend and a parent and a husband and brother and things like that, he would be forever sorely missed.
No doubt about it. Paddy, I imagine there's been plenty of chat within your family, a great racing family as well. I'm not sure if Pat ever actually managed to ride one of your horses over the years, but what a huge loss.
Yeah, no, he did. He's ridden, he rode Soul Power, and he's ridden a good few of the Power horses, actually. And yeah, I always feel like a little bit of a fraud eulogising about him, because I didn't know him particularly well. I'd met him a handful of times when he was riding a horse, and met him a few times socially and that, and always a gentleman. And I guess the one thing from the stuff I've read and the tributes that you hear, the very generous tributes, is kind of wish I knew him a bit better, to be honest. My strongest memories of Pat Smullen are usually Galway related. And with a smile on my face, I'll say it, because, you know, I think it's probably no it's no coincidence that the Dermot Weld dominance of Galway kind of ended when Pat Smullen kind of stopped riding there, because he was just absolutely brilliant. And I know Galway Festival is not exactly the Derby or the Guineas rent, but still, it's just that thing. When Smullen was on one, you knew he was going to be in the right position and get the horse the perfect spot coming down that hill. But I've read some of the pieces that Ruby's bit and heard Ruby on the radio and heard other tributes, and that's just awfully sad. And like Ruby said it there, you kind of, at the time on that great race day, that they organised where Ruby could only finish second AP champions race. But that guy, still, I was only drinking my takeaway coffee from one of those takeaway cups that they, I think I bought about 200 of them that day. But I can't remember a day at the races where there was as much goodwill and just as a common cause and just great fun and everyone smiling and everyone up for it and having the crack. And absolutely lashed down from the heavens, but still it was just brilliant crack at the curve that day. And it just showed the esteem which he's held and kind of probably reminded you like what a big presence he was, even though he's very quiet. Like he wasn't a very vocal jockey, it didn't seem, but from the tribute field, it seems like he was a bit of a mentor to some of the younger guys in the weight room. And all that stuff that you hear afterwards, all of it's nice to hear. I'd imagine for, like, it's no consolation to his family and everything, but it is lovely to hear that and hear the respect being paid. And that respect doesn't come cheap. It's earned. And he's a big loss. And you kind of forgot nearly that he was sick. At that time, it was really brought it home to that he wasn't riding in that race. So it's, Jesus, this is actually, you know, it's back. And that's what people were talking about. But then you saw him going around with a smile on his face. And then kind of out of sight, out of mind. I know Ruby would have been close to him, but I was very shocked to hear it because it just hadn't crossed my mind about Pat Smullen being sick, and then suddenly you hear that he's after dying, and it's just awfully sad. Yeah,
it was a hammer blow. I'm exactly like you. I had kind of, because not in his circle, you kind of just go, well, I hope he's okay, because he did begin to tweet a bit after that, for obvious reasons, about the cancer research, and you know, he's reacting to people and congratulating people. So okay, maybe he's on the improve. But yeah, it came as a awful hammer blow. I think it was on a Sunday night that day last year, which was a year to the day, unfortunately, wasn't it, when he passed away. You said such a day of goodwill. If you look back at the pictures and the footage, God, it was the most awful day of weather, wasn't it? It tipped down and you'd expect everyone running for cover and stuff like that, but everyone was out there in the parade ring, everyone was shaking hands. Pat Smullen did I don't know how many interviews. He must have been cold, wet, miserable. Just the, you know, the mark of the man, wasn't it?
It was. And we went for dinner after in the Hangman's, everybody that had been part of the day, and the last person to leave the Hangman's was Pat Smullen. And even though you knew he wasn't exactly feeling well, and you knew by looking at him he didn't look 100%, but it's a funny one, Patrick. I know when I think back, it was a miserable wet day, but I don't remember the weather. The day left that mark on you that it didn't matter if it was pissing rain or the sun was shining. It seemed inconsequential what the weather was like.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Oh, we did another good week for our tipping show last weekend. Paddy, yes, Lazuli or Lazuli, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, and Ocean Wind, two winners for you. Not the fanciest of prices, but I believe you had a little bit of help. Was it last weekend?
Well, they were Frank's two tips. Lazuli and whatever the other yoke was called, the Cesar was try one. But my nap won, so I managed to nap an 11 to 10.
7 to 1, was it? 10 to 1, was it?
No, it was 11 to 10. There was a 10
All right.
Dave was actually the nap just to get out of the way early, and that won, thankfully. But yeah, it was a decent weekend tip, and I guess. I mean, I suppose the winners, you're better off, as Ruby always says, you're better off with an even money winner than a 100 to 1 unlucky loser. So, yeah, so not huge prices there, and a couple of winners we tipped up, but winners nonetheless.
Winners, winners, winners. And we'll have loads more this weekend. I believe Etnea was tipped up at the weekend, and she was brilliant, albeit second.
Yeah, but that, to be fair, that would have been, if you were trying to claim that, the two of us were saying, like, it's basically, it was, we both had the exact same logic that it was a nearly race for a lot of, at the end of the season for a lot of the fillies in the race. So that Etnea was the only one by process of elimination, was the least exposed, so maybe wasn't quite on the downward trajectory that a lot of them were. So I don't think we would have been claiming that as a strong fancy.
Well, look, we've got this weekend to come, and you'll be back with us on Friday. Loads of winners for Newmarket's Cambridge. Cambridge is an easy race to win anyway, so that should be no problem.
You just have to be William Haggis and have Yoko two stone up his sleeve. That's all.
Easy peasy. Yeah. No one has done William Haggis.
William Haggis is coming up later in the show, but he did kind of tell us the one that won't get in is the one to be on.
Yeah.
That's not ideal, is it? I mean, horse tracker, obviously. We'll go with the horse tracker, put it on that. Yeah, he's got to be very shrewd in the handicaps, William Haggis, as we saw at the weekend in the Airgold Cup with that horse, who is a group horse in a hand, well, not in handicaps anymore.
Not anymore. And how did he win from where he was? Tom Marcand was very, very cool. And they made the mistake in the Stewards' Cup of riding him too forward, didn't they? And he was too free. So they had to settle him. But I'd say he was wondering, would the gaps ever open for him? But by God, did he run them down late on. Very, very cool ride. Never panicked.
I'd say I've backed that horse like every time he's ever got beat and haven't backed him either time. He's won two out of his last four now, is it, or something? I haven't backed him either time. Typical.
So in future, when you've backed Mohar, can you put it on your Twitter page so the rest of us can just steer clear?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be horse racing, Paddy. This can be everything, anything, any football team, NFL, rugby, you name it. And, you know, it's a handy little... I think there was used to be Barry's Bismarck's in there, but a long, long time ago in Canapore Racing, Paddy's...
Yeah. Paddy's punts versus Barry's Bismarck's.
Well, my strategy with regard to punting is to try and forget as quickly as possible. Because
hang on, Paddy, you tell me you're not one of those lads who's got the Excel sheet with the profit and loss and the whole year to date. And you
if
know,
I'm ever on a good run, I start keeping track. But as soon as it starts going pear-shaped, I stop keeping track.
Well, listen, we spoke a lot about William Haggis. What a wonderful weekend he had. So let's talk to him. Myself and Ruby and Paddy caught up with William Haggis on a group phone call to discuss all things air and all things Newmarket.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
It's a perfect weekend, Mr. Haggis, for you to join us because it was a brilliant weekend for you last weekend. The Fantastic Adabe, once again, a great win, but I think we have to start with the Air Gold Cup. And he's finally delivered, I think it's fair to say, Nahar, because big fave for the Stewards' Cup, but everything came right on Saturday.
Yeah, he won really well, and we felt we made an error with him at Goodwood, and we rectified it on Saturday. But I have to say, he did well to win the horse. I obviously watched him the whole way, and he didn't have a trouble-free passage either, and so he did well to pick up. But I suspect the second and third were slowing down, as well as him quickening. So I'd be interested to see the last furlong, how quick it actually was. But he did very well to win.
Are you a sectionals man, William?
No, but I have a son who's into that sort of thing. And he said at Air, you can only do the last three furlongs. So we'll get a rough idea.
Okay. So he'll tell you with all the gadgets and stopwatches and whatnot, whether I think it's fair to say a lot of people come out of that and saying he is a group horse now. Is that the plan to go up to group level?
Yeah, he's going to have to be though. Yeah, the plan was for him to go to Dubai to be trained by Sheikh Ahmed's Dubai trainer. But I think that's going on the shelf now. And I think he'll stay in training, and obviously we'll aim him at the better races next year.
So the plan worked for Mr. Haggis then, I guess.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Well done, very well executed. And what about Adabe? I mean, you've had some fun with this horse down under, obviously, bagging those couple of group ones. And it's great to see him get a big win, albeit a deserved win, I guess you could say, yeah, on these shorts.
Yeah, no, he's the most lovely horse. And really, since we put cheek pieces on him, at Ascot last year at the Royal Meeting, he's gone from strength to strength, and he's become an extremely consistent horse too. I don't think he's been out of the first two since we did that. And, you know, he's one of those that runs his guts out in the Group 1 races, but possibly is about £3 light here. But obviously clearly showed in Australia that he was a good horse there, and he is a good horse. And if conditions are in his favour, he'll be competitive. Now, Saturday was an awkward one because it was his first run for a bit. He had a big penalty, and you would expect to frighten most of them off. But there were several horses in that race rated 110 plus, and he had to give them £7. So in the circumstances, although two furlongs from home, I was beginning to wonder the wisdom of running him up there. But in the circumstances, he did really well to win. Very pleased.
William, he must have been delighted with the turn of foot he showed, as you said, after he went by the 2 furlong pole and got that split, and how quickly he put the rest to bed.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a smart horse, Ruby. He's a good horse. You know, he's every bit as good as he has been, and that was pleasing. I mean, the reason for going there was because the pre-dollar, which he's also in, is only 2 weeks before Champions Day, which doesn't give you much time if things don't go right.
And William, your jockey was in flying form on Saturday, Tom Markhand. And there were a couple of different rides. I mean, he rode Johan on the pace all the way. He couldn't have really been any further back in the Air Gold Cup without not really being in the race. And then on Adabe, he showed great confidence. He displayed
a whole array of a talent for Saturday.
Yeah, he's an extremely talented rider, as you know, and his confidence is really high. And you know, jockeys, horses, trainers even do things that you don't expect when your confidence is up. So he's in a rich vein of form at the moment. It's marvellous to see. And, you know, his next problem will be believing everything that's written about him in the paper. As you know, that takes a bit of handling. But he's doing really, really well. And he's a good rider and a very nice chap too.
Seems like the kind of guy who'd be able to kind of take that praise, so to speak, and be quite level-headed about it. That's from the outside coming in there.
You're quite right. But when you've been around, I say around as long as I have, I've been at it a long time, and I've seen lots of jockeys get heaped with praise and trainers heaped with praise, and then things go awry. And, you know, it's very tough. You don't forget, about 3 years ago, the greatest female jockey was Josephine Gordon. And she had a wobble. She was the first to 100 winners, I think, or the second. She had a wobble, and she's just coming back now, which is great. But she has 18 months in the wilderness. And it can happen, sadly. It happens to a lot of people in life, never mind horse racing. So, you know, Tom's got a real level head. He's a good guy. He's 22 years old, you know. So he's got lots of things to go right and to go wrong for him in his life. I don't want to be down, because he's a great talent. But, you know, he's... Ruby will know exactly what I'm saying anyway.
Oh, I always found the easiest way was not to read the good, because then you didn't have to read the bad.
Absolutely. I've got a sign in my kitchen. It is better to keep your mouth shut and appear stupid than to open it and remove all doubt. I look at it a lot.
That's excellent. I'm going to have to buy that, or at least find one of those, or just write it out and put it in my own fridge. Lots of people actually probably sending it to me anyway. Listen, a great weekend, as mentioned, up in Scotland, but a great trip to France as well, with Sea of Faith winning in those now familiar Sunderland Holding tilts, which I thought are connected kind of to Christopher Soy, who owns Sea of the Stars. I see Sea of Faith is a great win, battling win of the weekend. I see she's still entered for Newmarket with her sister as well. I think it's this Thursday or Friday. Is she intended runner?
I don't know. I've written to Mrs. Choi this morning just to give my view. If she's all right, my gut feeling is to run Sea of Faith, because it's her last season and it's a Group 3 race for fillies down the road. It's a pretty unconventional way of going about it, but... what have we got to lose? She's a stakes winner now, which is the reason we kept her in training. She's had knee surgery at the back end of her three-year-old career last year. She's not got many races in her. She doesn't want heavy. It's bound to rain in time. So why don't we... My gut feeling is to go with Sea of Faith. Born with Pride, loves the soft, and the softer the better for her. So she can wait till deep into the autumn for having a crack at a better race. So... my feeling is that we ought to go to Newmarket on Friday. The ground was very slick there last Saturday. And although we're forecast some rain Wednesday, Thursday, we'll need plenty.
Yeah, well, same here, actually. Would you believe it? A stole over the weekend. There was a lot of horse being pulled out for quick ground.
Yes.
That's a new one for the stole in September, I can tell you. Listen, let's start looking ahead to the weekend. Three brilliant days at Newmarket. We've already touched on a few runners, but I'm just going to run through a few others that hopefully will be scorching up the Newmarket turf. Now, Yazaman is a horse who is, I guess, a lot of people be very jealous of him, because he's been to every racing festival, from Royal Ascot to Glorious Goodwood to York Seabourn meeting to Doncaster's Ledger meeting. He's run credibly in pretty much all of them. Is he going to go for the Tattersall Stakes on Thursday?
He is. We although he was second in the Windsor Castle over five and has run on a quick six, we feel that he needs more ground. You know, he's not sort of quick enough at the moment. So, you know, we're going to try him seven or even a mile. We got nothing to lose. But we just need to find something that's going to get him across the line in a group race. So there's every chance he might run there, yeah.
Excellent stuff. Well, best of luck with Yazaman. They've been very popular and very good colours for you in the last few days, that's for sure.
Yeah.
On the Friday, we touched on the Princess Royal. What about the Rosemary Stakes? You've got a stack entered there. One who caught my eye was a mare we haven't seen in a while.
Umalnar. Now, she looked very impressive a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, she's a pretty good filly. She is, Umalnar, and she's nearly there. She needs a straight track and dry ground, and there's a 7 furlong listed at Ascot the following weekend. She may wait for that, but basically the horses in on Friday in the Rosemary are all horses desperate to get some black type and are probably not good enough. So we may have a bit of a if in doubt run it situation and run a few of the girls, but we'll see.
Well, that's the thing to do with those three up and upwards fillies. Saturday is the big day, of course, the Cambridgeshire, the big race. You've got a few who entered. Let's talk about them. Montafam, Sinjari, they appear to be the best two chances of your quartet. Is that fair to say?
Sinjari, for sure. He's definitely going to run. Montafam might do. It'll depend on... There's no Silver Cambridgeshire this year, so he'll definitely get in, and it will depend on the weight range. You know, if the weight range is very narrow... He's 109. Very few horses win off 109 in the Cambridgeshire. But if the bottom weight is 99, then it certainly will be considered. Johan is going to be left in, but he'll have a £6 penalty for winning a £4. I don't know what the penalty is, five maybe, for winning a short bonk at Ayr on Saturday. So he's unlikely, but he wants rain. So any rain will suit him, and it's going to come. So we're just leaving him in as an option. But he might not get in. And Illarab won off 90, and he's pretty unlikely to get in, but he's a pretty smart horse. He'd be dangerous if he got in with his penalty. So, but again, he is better with cutting the ground. So we like a few balls in the air. It's a relatively valuable race during COVID times, so let's give it a go.
It'd be nice, handicap double, to get off the Ergo Cup and the Cambridgeshire back.
It would help, but let's dream, shall we?
Why not? Listen, of the quartet, would you reckon Sinjari, without annoying any owners, probably is your best chance?
Probably. Nice horse.
Probably.
He's 103 now. It's plenty.
Fair enough. Just a quick chat on your 2-year-olds that are entered. You've got a couple in the Royal Lodge, and Alan Carr and Mohafet, who's still a maiden, yeah. So I probably entered a long time ago.
He's not running. And Alan Carr, I'm not sure he'll run.
Okay, and Sacred in the Sheepy Park?
A little bit lower. She definitely run.
She's been very consistent.
We may put a bit of headgear on her. She's been beaten 3 times now. I thought the last time she nearly came to win. We can make lots of excuses for her in the circumstances, ground at York and inexperience at Ascot. But at Doncaster, although she raced away from them and had to go earlier than we'd planned, I just wondered whether she went fully through it. So I think we're going to put some cheek pieces on her. I'm sure she'll get the trip well. If it's quick ground, she'll run a good race. She's a pretty good filly, that. We'll see.
Well, you've been very generous with your time, William. Best of luck with the weekend.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Okay, it's time for everybody's favourite section of From the Horse's Mouth. It is Dear Paddy. Dear Paddy, it's Listowel week, and apparently hotel bookings are still high, so it seems that the pubs will be as busy as ever, but people won't be able to attend the racecourse a mile outside the town. So we're asking you, where will people be safer from COVID and less likely to spread it to others? A pub rammed with drinkers, spluttering coronavirus all over each other as they roar the racing on TV, hugging if their horse wins and spending hours shoulder to shoulder with people from all over the country? Or a wide open racecourse holding just a fraction of its capacity with a cleansing Atlantic air blowing through the place and a COVID-19 compliance officers patrolling like militia? As you can tell from my impartial language, I have no strong view on the matter, but what do you think? This was sent in from Connor in Dublin. Not as you might have thought, Geraint in Doncaster.
Well, I'm glad you're coming to me for public health advice, because obviously it's my specialist topic. Connor, the fact that you're in Dublin means the whole bloody thing's irrelevant. You're meant to be in lockdown anyway, you muppet. So Listowel, it is funny. And I think, are we having owners at the track at the start of coming back? Racing, to be honest with you, from, you know, the start of this, not to get all serious for a moment, like for the scandal of the Cheltenham Festival continuing, all that kind of stuff, to racing going on behind closed doors. Racing has been a sport that has kind of flown the flag properly and done this and seems to have done things very well. It's come down like a ton of bricks on anyone who's kind of breached the regulations and stuff like that. It really has been, I think, a poster child of how sports can reopen and everything like that. So I'd be very supportive of it's a slowly but surely, it's a pain in the arse. I have no idea when we'll be back racing properly. I mean, it's hard to even, like, I have no idea if we'll even be at Cheltenham next year. Like, Leopards Town at Christmas looks very unlikely, probably, from a crowd perspective, all that kind of stuff. But the thing is, we'll get there at some stage because it's been done in the proper way. So Connor from Dublin, you need to just chill the pill, relax the cacks, and you won't be hugging and kissing in pubs or anything like that, because you still have to sit down and have your €9, you're basically a €15 pint. You have to get a bowl of soup and a pint. So yeah, just chill, watch the racing, enjoy it as much as you can, and in time, my dear boy, in time, we should be back partying once again.
But Paddy, you've been in hotels, Paddy. So have I. I was in Galway and they kept telling me, oh, the bookings are as high as always because you couldn't get a room. But you couldn't get a room because the hotels are only operating at 20% capacity. They have no staff. So the bookings aren't as high anywhere. I was in Galway. There wasn't a sinner in the place, like, compared to what it could have been. The same for Listowel. I'll tell you, all the bookings are up. Puppy drove through Listowel. Robert Powell drove through Listowel yesterday. It was a ghost town. Like, the bookings aren't up because no one has staff. So there's less rooms to get. It's not this big, oh, it's so much dangerous to be in the hotels and in the pubs. There've been a fifth of the people in them that could have been in them or were in them. And to back up what you're saying, I think racecourses for years were at a disadvantage by not having public transport to the racecourses. I think that could be its saving grace in getting people back racing, because most racecourses in Ireland, you have to drive yourself there. You can't walk to them or get a bus to them or get the train to them. So for getting crowds back racing by the fact that they don't have public transport could be a help.
Who knew? We're going backwards in time to go forwards in time. I don't think it'd be a Green Party initiative now to get people back racing, because you know what? You can drive there in your own car, one person a car, don't forget. But look, hey, as I said, that's a really good point. Let's get some more views from Twitter, shall we? First comes from @Chris9478544. It's a lovely name, Chris. I mean, you've really gone to the depths of your imagination with that particular handle. I think it's Christoph Pollard. I think I'll have to give this one to the jockey, Ruby. What do they/you think of George Rooke's ride, where he went for home a lap early? Now, that was at Wolverhampton, I think, on Friday night. What do they think of the 14-day ban? Was that right? Even though jockeys do dangerous riding, and get nothing done about it. What are your thoughts, Ruby?
I think they're two completely different things. I would straight away have deferred Chris Rooker's case to the BHA, examined all angles of any suspicion of corruption, and then dealt with it even for the mistake that it was. You have to have those penalties so guys can't take the law into their own hands for deceit. But I think if you examine it and see that there is no deceit, then it's a genuine mistake. Now, I never got distance wrong, but I did jump the water jump in Stratford one day instead of going around it. I pulled out going to the last fence under the stands rail in Stratford, had my eyes on the last fence. So when my horse took off, I just remember putting my head down, switching my whip from my right to my left, to get him as close to the outside running rail as I could to deliver my challenge. But I had simply forgotten that we had to go left and go around the water jump. So I rode my horse out over the water jump without looking where I was going, and therefore got disqualified. And I think I got a 21-day ban, actually, for it. It was a genuine mistake. I was concentrating on winning. But I think if you can get 21 days or 14 days for a general genuine mistake, how does a lesser ban for a deliberate action really sit? It doesn't sit with me. If you, even for guys who are suspended for running and riding inquiries, getting 21 days or 28 days for a deliberate deceitful action, how does a guy who makes a genuine mistake get the equivalent ban? I don't believe stewards or starters or judges or the people who write the race conditions or anybody else in horse racing gets the equivalent bans for mistakes that jockeys get. And I think it's quite easy to prove that was a mistake.
That's the thing, right? It's supposed to be deterrent, okay? Right, so the ban...
Yes, I agree. Right?
And George Russell would want the world to have swallowed him up. Everyone would have seen it, you know what I mean? Yeah, so
the embarrassment of it, even when I was leaving Stratford, even walk back from the track into the parade ring in Stratford, like I could... I would have loved to have ridden all around the race course, jumped into the River Avon and swam out of there. I didn't want to come back into the parade ring. Like the embarrassment of it, the fact that you have done something so stupid is harsh enough. And you can't expect stewards on the day to have enough information to deal with that. But there are enough between background checks with bookmakers, accounts, everything. That would have been so easy to see if there was deceit or not. And then deal with it accordingly.
Not that I want to go over this incident, but let's. Were you in front at the time, Stratford, or did you know straight away when you jumped the water?
I wasn't. I was a lent down. I was trying to get to the horse in front, and I went away from him to try and deliver my challenge. As my horse started to slow down, I was thinking to myself, what are you slowing down for? So I started trying harder. The horse was slowing down because he was looking at the water jump with rails in front of it, wondering what exactly I was doing. Sending him that way. So in fairness to the horse, he was good and clever, but he jumped the water jump. I finished second. I crossed the line in second, but I was obviously disqualified. But I have done it. It cost me a couple of big days in France. It was a huge suspension for the crime I had committed. Yes, everybody that had backed my horse lost their money, but everybody that had backed the fourth horse each way then became third. And they got placed. Now, if you backed them off course, it was double result, of course, was it? Or was double result count on that?
No, double result would have been chucked out by the stewards.
Chucked out by the stewards. Shows my knowledge of that.
Paddy, when you were in the parade ring welcoming back your jockeys, was there ever a case where you're like, here, that was a brutal ride?
The jockey would usually be honest enough to come in and say, and by the way, it's sometimes the horses isn't going for you as well. Do you know what I mean? It's very easy to be standing in the stands, cheering through your pocket. You're kind of hiring a professional to do their job. Do you know what I mean? And like, of course, they're not going to do it 100% every time, but hopefully more times than not do it, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Hopefully get it right more than they get it wrong.
I saw the lads, the whole field in Tramore, bar one rider, one day, do two laps of Tramore instead of three. And what happened, then there's an air of confusion. If two go, oh Jesus, maybe we are finishing. You can't ask any, you can't ring the lads in the stand. Have we gone twice or three times? Quick conversation. Are we finishing? Aren't we finishing? And then you start covering your arse. But I get a bit closer in case we are finishing. So you start second guessing each other as well. So, but look, mistakes happen. And once it's a mistake and not a genuine deceitful act, I don't think the two should be treated the same.
Were you ever in a race, Ruby, where you saw a jockey kick on and you're like, oh, hang on. Because it would have been like faking him, I think, is a track that happens a lot at and those sorts
happened
of
a few times, yeah. Have I ever, obviously, when you go 3 miles, you have to jump so many much more jumps than you do in a 2 mile race. I never got that mixed up in the jump race because I've only jumped 10, I should have jumped 15. That was the easy one for us over jumps, that you wouldn't get mixed up. But I have seen lads, and you give them a shout, we're not finishing this time, we're going again. Smaller tracks, Sligo, Tramore. In Tramore, the 2 and 3 mile start aren't that far apart. And lads can get confused that way. Same as Sligo, the starts aren't that far apart, but you have to do an extra circuit because they're only literally a mile round. So I'll be doing 2 laps, 3 laps. That's where people get confused.
Has any jockey ever gone to you at the start? Ruby, is this 3 or 2 miles? How many jumps is this again?
Funny enough, Patrick, more than you'd like to know.
Whoa. I was asking that expecting it. Don't be stupid.
more than you'd like to know. We're walking out of the parade ring and asking you, how far is this race?
Oh my God.
Like I used to just laugh to myself, think like, it's no wonder I wouldn't follow you to the start. But yeah, more than you think.
Please tell me they're amateurs or something. Like, well.
We'll just leave it there.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. That's fair enough. Okay, that's surprising. That's a surprising one. How many times are we going around? Okay, Paddy, I'm going to move on and give you the more important question of the two. This is from Baz Turk, 26. Settle an argument first, Paddy. When the Sunday roast beef is plated up and you only realise you have no bisto in the cupboard, is oxtail cup of soup an acceptable replacement for gravy?
Well, you're wrong on both counts, because the only way to make gravy is to get a little bit of flour, a little bit of gravy browning, sprinkle of salt and some water, and just stir it up in the same pan that you cooked your meat in. So it adds the beet juices as well. And pour in as much water as you're going to have in your gravy boat in. And just stir it up until it comes to a little simmer. And that'll be nicer than any bisto or oxtail, whatever you want, whatever you're having yourself. So gravy browning. Make sure you always have gravy browning in your press.
Mrs. Sabina Powers gravy recipe.
That's it.
And no red wine in there?
No red wine.
Chateau, whatever it is, Chateau Pear.
You couldn't be putting the red wine into your... You're going to drink the red wine, obviously, but you couldn't be pouring it into your gravy.
I don't mind a bit of red wine in my gravy. Yeah. And a bit of cranberry jam as well, actually. Just sweetens it up nice. There's one for your next one. Finally, lads, this one is from the Dogger. this fella, also known as Bill Boff. This probably is for both of you. Who have you got for the Kerry National this week? I'll start with you, Paddy.
I was thinking plan of attack for Henry de Bromhead. If it goes, it was Fort and the Kim Muir, actually, because I was looking at this for last weekend. I thought we were going to be talking about it on Friday. We didn't get around to it, but haven't seen him since Cheltenham. But just Henry's quite good at getting his horses right. And for these, and obviously his chasers are always the best horses that he has. So just thought, yeah, plan of attack might be one that is a little bit unexposed.
Ruby?
I'd always start with the Galway Plate, Patrick. Cabaret Queen was third. The West Awake was fourth. Blazer was seventh. Ravenhill is your anti-post favourite. But he came here last year after being fifth in the Galway Plate. He hasn't ran since he won the National Hunt Chase at the Cheltenham Festival. So fitness would be a worry for him. And the other one I think that could be really interesting is Mortal. He unseated early in the Galway Plate. He then went to Killarney where he beat Robin de Foray and Blazer. He's up £6 for that win. But it's a race that I won on two horses before they both won the Kerry National. That race in Killarney used to be in the old Tralee, Born On, You're a Leader. And they both went from there to win in the Stole. And I think Mortal could be still ahead on handicapper.
Plan of attack and Mortal, two to follow in the Kerry National at the Stole of the Harvest Festival. Now, Newmarket's Cambridgeshire meeting starts on Thursday too. We'll be recording our tipping show on Thursday evening so we can include Friday's racing. If you haven't subscribed to the show, why not? But make sure you don't miss that. Thank you very much to our two esteemed guests, Paddy Power and Ruby Walsh. Enjoy your week of cracking racing, I think it's fair to say.
Oh, what is that?
Thanks very much, PK. Well done.
Cheers, PK.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.
Very generous with your time, William. I'll open the floor to the lads in case they want to say anything else. And Paddy Power, remarkably quiet for the first time.
Written on your fridge, William. I'm just keeping the mouth shut.
I'll never got a word in that.